It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Tonight, let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Concerned. Well, Daniel Esselin, well, I'm glad he had a good time. We'll have him back soon. But I still, there's so much stuff that you could go on for hours and hours and hours and hours and hours. Of course, he wants to promote his new book, Shadow Masters. And he already sold his movie rights to the true story of the Bilderberger Group. $100 million picture by Halcyon. Now, these are the guys that made the Terminator series. And I'm going, okay, well, that franchise, I guess they made him some money. They're going to go do it. Well, they tell the real story. And he's like, don't care. I got the money. Lets me do other stuff and document all the other goodies. You know, they're worried somebody else would get it and tell, you know, the real truth. So I can understand, you know, what did he sell out? Well, I don't know. Depends what he does with the money. You know, they got him, whatever. They spelled it right. I remember the there was a movie that was done called The International. I think that was the name of it. And it was about, you know, kind of this central banking thing and so on. And they just kind of breeze over. It's really an action flick. And, you know, and I love you. And I know I love you more. So it's whatever. Get people to go watch it. At least, I don't know, is that a net benefit or not? Does it kind of open it up? Does it create some controversy, more attention for his book? Will it increase his book sales? Will more people know? I don't know. I'm not that concerned. What I am concerned with is, how is it that they're able to accomplish all the things that they do? You know, it's our willing participation. And why are we willing? I mean, what is it that we're promised? You know, how shiny are the bars in our gilded cage? You know, we get a lot of really nice velour furniture inside our cage. That's better. The handcuffs have velvet on them. I'm more interested in that. I really am trying to, you know, because throughout history, there's always been revolutions. It just comes around, you know, that's why they call it revolution. Because there's something that always happens. You know, people become aware of stuff. It starts to, you know, gore their ox. You know, freedom's just another word for nothing left to lose. It gets to that point to where you're like, okay, I'm going to go do something. I'm going to learn. Yeah, that's one thing that was interesting. The last scene in The Grapes of Wrath, you know, The Grapes of Wrath, that old, oh, God, this is in the late 30s that they did this during the Great Depression, Dust Bowl, people living out of their Model Ts and so on. And they're traveling across the country, and it was really a program. The government was the hero. They were there on the relief plantation, kind of come here, we'll help you, let you camp out and get you a meal. And at the end of the movie, it was all about, you know, I don't know what happened. I didn't pay attention, but I think it was Gary Cooper, and he goes, I'm going to find out now. I'm going to go find out. And that was the end of the movie. And he kind of, you know, it kind of steered it towards, well, there was some, you know, big industrial somebody. There was some, you know, guy with a top hat somewhere that was the problem. And the government's my friend. I love the government. And I'm going, what'd they just say? Don't look over here, look over there. So, and to see as if there was a difference between the two. So I can see the motivation behind the making of that movie, the popularity of The Grapes of Wrath and the book. And the direction the country took. I mean, they were being directed and focused towards, you know, this is the enemy, and we need to have a part of the solution is more of this. the social economic engineering. You weren't socially and economically engineered enough. That's why, you know, the social and economic fabric, you know, went to crap because, you know, there weren't enough dials for enough bureaucracies created to turn all the dials that you newly created to make sure your life is better, pinky swear. Okay? Okay, you know, I can see, but it's coming again. There are going to be people who are going to be asking exactly the same questions. What information will they get? Where do they get it? Who will validate it, vouch for it, promote it, encourage it, endorse it? You know, who are those people? Who do you trust? What's the foundation by which they, you know, discern something as being good or bad? It's one of the reasons and the show's Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock is because, you know, the Declaration of Independence, powerful document. You know, the right words at the right time by the right guys, man. I mean, you know, Thomas Jefferson, ooh, the man. And it was he was a little bit different than a lot of the other revolutionaries in that he really emphasized the power and the sovereignty of the individual. You know, it wasn't about the colonies. It wasn't about this new country, America. It wasn't about, you know, any other issue other than what this whole thing can do to accomplish the protection of the rights of the individual. Man, he was big on this individual thing. Me, 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 mine, me. And everything else derived from that. You start to have, when you get that mindset and you're looking at the things that are happening around the world, you can get really, you know, just like Daniel Esselstyn was saying, is it getting pulled down the rabbit hole? You know, we're going to go look and follow this one thread. Well, a lot of times that's how you find out a lot of stuff. That's what did it for me. You know, I was a young man, just like a lot of these guys, and they start and you just start pulling a thread and it's interesting how bad it can get. And you go, okay, well, you know, let's see how bad. No, it's that bad. Whoa, there's a little bit more points over. Whoa, that's pretty bad. Whoa, it's a lot bigger. Oh, my goodness. And you finally go, damn, we'd be in heap big trouble. And when you have children, you got to take this stuff into account. What can one person do? That was my speech at the Liberty Forum at the Free State Project a couple months ago when I spoke at an event they have in New Hampshire. And it was the power of one. You know, what can one person do? Because I remember the conversation I had in Washington, D.C., a big bureaucrat, it's a long story, but his name was Jack Cremins, and he was head of the National Trade Data Bank, you know, part of this Omnibus Trade Competitiveness Act that was, you know, I was researching and stuff. And it was all about, you know, he was one of the boys. I mean, he had to get out of jail free card. That was obvious. He was, you know, I need not worry of, you know, you little pissant, you know, go away. And I had gotten the meeting because of Senator Dennis DeConcini, which was a Democrat senator at the time here in the early 90s and the late 80s, that using his office's fax machine, all of a sudden, man, you know, oh, it came from a U.S. senator. We'd be having us a meeting. So I meet with him, explain to him what I was doing, what I understood, what I knew. You know, I needed access to certain information that was allowed me by some law for my father's company, blah, blah, blah. I see what you're doing. Yeah, yada, yada, yada. He pushes the stuff back to me. Yeah, kid. And what are you going to do about it? What can one person do? And I go, you know, I don't know. I think that's a good question. I'll find out. I'll get back to you. So for about 2 years, everything I did, every activist, every lawsuit I filed, every campaign I ran, you know, which was a lot at the time, I would send him copies of it, his office. Yeah, here, this is what I'm doing. This is what I'm doing. And I just did that for a couple of years. Well, I tell you, I did it up until Clinton won in 92, you know, during the 92 election cycle. And because he was part of the Bush administration and so on. So I'm just like, you know, what do I have to understand? How bad they are or how uninformed we are? Because it wasn't because we had some kind of support of this. It wasn't because we, you know, were in agreement that they had this ability to socially and economically engineer us with our money, you know, wearing the shiny badge of authority from the United States government because they say they can. They go do whatever in our name, get everybody angry at us. You know, it wasn't that I think that we, in support of all the stuff that they were doing, it's because we don't know, and they don't want us to know. You know, whose responsibility is it? It's ours. We got to go find out. I mean, you know, if you want to just head in the sand, I don't care. I'm for that. I mean, you get what you get, you know. But I don't think you have any obligation, you know, to me or anybody else to go, you know, fix it, you know. But don't be coming to me whining later when you're like, I can't eat, or you know, I can't feed myself, or I don't have a place to live, and my kids are starving, and I can't get medicine, and this bureaucracy over here says I can't get access to whatever because I don't have my chip or whatever. I mean, you know, when stuff happens, you know, I'm like, hey. You know, don't be surprised when the heads start rolling. So I just wanted, you know, so I'm encouraging you to act in, you know, what I hope you perceive to be your own self-interest. Why? Because it's in your self-interest. Well, there's a lot of stuff going on today in the news as just example of all of this. And we'll go over just some of it when we come back. Be prepared to be scared. We'll be right back.
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Oh, yeah. Your smile speaks books to me. Break up with each and every one of your looks to me. Honey, you're starting something deep inside.
If I can make you smile when it gets so bad, you just have to, you know, take a look at it and get a little bit of a grin. It's the only way that I've been able to maintain my sanity for 22 years of this stuff. You know, where's the love? Well, you know, a lot of times you find it in the humor of a situation. Let me go ahead and, you know, give you an example. I'm going to try and keep this light because, I mean, dang, you know, it just keeps getting worse every day. One of the benefits of technology and empowering individuals, you know, a lot of times I don't think the big bad guys really understand the empowerment of individuals, because a lot of times they, you know, they're older, they just don't see it. You know, you it's like the Gutenberg printing press. You know, Martin Luther starts, you know, handing out Bibles to Lutherans. You know, pulling away from the Catholic Church. Oh, heck no. No. We got centralized authority in the Pope, and he tells the priestesses what to do. And you're not following the regimen here, Holmes. So we're going to have to, we got an Inquisition thing coming on. So this has always been the way. It's always a collectivized, monopolized force, power, you know, because we can. Well, there's a lot of ways that you democratize power, you know, in that you diversify it. You put that power in the hands of individuals to be making their decision. Well, you know, you do that with purchasing power. That's why you have celebrities endorsing whatever. So I can see where we can kind of look at history and see every time that we've empowered individuals to have the power, literally, of energy off-grid. You start, you know, getting more and more technologically advanced on that, they're moving a little bit further away from the road. You know, you might even have to go out to a mailbox on the main highway miles from where you live to get your mail. Ooh, what if everybody was like that? Man, that would be none too good. We like them all in apartment buildings, condos, so we can, you know, we can control them easier. Cities. So what happens when you're able to communicate instantaneously with your friends and there's nothing anybody can do about it? Well, they'll try. I give you the Twitter revolution in Iran. After Ahmadinejad election, in his re-election, there was controversy going on. I mean, of course, you have foreign interest, you know, paying these guys and pumping them up and giving them money and doing kind of, but it didn't seem like it took a whole lot of effort to get a lot of people out there complaining. So was it manufactured? How much was it manufactured? Did they have, you know, 15,000 CIA agents with their iPhone out there? I mean, you know, how bad can it get? I mean, a lot of times you can't force this stuff. I mean, you might be able to help it, but, you know, it's like Tiananmen Square. I mean, you know, how much did Americans get involved in that? Did they buy them some fax machines? I mean, you know, I don't know, but I know what the result was. Let's take a look at this. Iran Twitter revolution comes to Paris. Iran's so-called Twitter revolution came to Paris shopping street Thursday in an exhibition that takes some of the thousands of mobile phone videos shot by anti-government protesters and turns them into art. International and local Iranian media were banned from freely covering the massive wave of protests sparked by the disputed re-election last June of President Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. And I found out one of the talk show hosts has a good way of remembering his name. I'm in a shed. I'm in a shed. Makes it a lot easier. But Iranians overcame the reporting ban by using social networking and image sharing websites such as Twitter, Facebook, YouTube, Flickr, despite efforts by local officials to cut off mobile phones and the internet. Do you think the government wouldn't go that far? Of course they would. For footage of a young woman, Neda Ahad Sultan, being shot dead during a demonstration, was put on YouTube and quickly turned her into a powerful and poignant symbol of the opposition movement. I remember that. Always something like that. The organizers of the Paris exhibition, titled Action One, viewed thousands of internet videos from Iran before making a selection to present at a gallery on one of Paris's busiest shopping streets, the Rue de Rivoli. I don't know. You say it in French accent, probably sounds better. Banks of television sets were there show dramatic video of young people throwing stones at security forces, riot police, carrying out savage beatings, and scenes of blazing tires and cars. One bank made up of nine screens showed the same troubled street scene shot from various angles. Street level, rooftops, apartment windows. Often the voice of the person filming can be heard. Come away from the window. A policeman is loading his gun, says a woman's voice in Farsi, the most widely spoken language in Iran, in one of the videos in which the exhibition organizers have added French subtitles. It's a live commentary. They talk at the same time as they film, said one of the organizers, who, like the others, asked not to be named for fear of being harassed by Iranian authorities. The exhibition, which runs until May 16th, is presented by a Paris-based group called Ruben Vert, which in English means green ribbon, the symbol of Iran's opposition movement. The group, made up of Iranians living in France, as well as French artists, filmmakers, and other assorted intellectuals, was set up to support Iran's opposition shortly after the election year a year ago. Shoppers get to see blah, 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 blah. Think about it. You have all of this news going on where you have, and Iran is not, you know, this is not, you know, guys running around in burkas. You know, this is not, you know, a country that's going around, herding goats down the main avenue. You know, they're a sophisticated, I wouldn't say westernized, but they were at one time when the Shah was there during the 70s, 50s, 60s, 70s. And it was all kinds of tight with the U.S. And they, you know, when the World Trade Center went down, it was the Iranians that were the most supportive by the millions coming out and support America. Love you. Long time. So I'm just, wow, you know, we seem to have forgotten that. Plus they have, you know, a lot of young people, technologically sophisticated, you know, like here in America. As this was going on, they were taking their cell phones and little mobile videos and so on. This is just last summer. They're going out, you know, in real time, just posting stuff on the internet. They're taking pictures. They're YouTubing it. Facebook, Twitter, Flickr. You see my point? And what did they do? Bunch of French Iranians and French artists and so on, they take all this information and they turn it into street theater. They turn it into art at a gallery in the shopping area. So what's interesting is you'll have the same event in a street and you'll have views of from the rooftops looking down on it. You'll have from windows of apartment buildings. You'll be on the street. You'll be in the gutter. You have rolling commentary. This is the kind of coverage that you have whenever anything happens. This is present and future, past. Whenever you have the ability to communicate information instantaneously from anywhere on the planet about anything, how easy is it to get away with you do some kind of false flag thing, or you're going to take down a building. You know, 2001, the World Trade Center goes in, they had a few video cameras happen to catch it. You know, how many would get it now? Heck, everybody, you know, they whip out their phone, push the button. And I'll tell you, my BlackBerry, I got a BlackBerry Storm, and it is amazing to me the resolution you get on a well-lit picture. I'm outside taking a picture. I can zoom in, you know, like a dot, and I can read a traffic sign. You know, you zoom in. It is amazing. Well, there's a little thing that happened that I'm going to tell you about. You stay right there. You come back. Did you know that Bureau of Land Management was doing a surprise inspection in the oil rig 2 hours before it exploded? Was there a lot of guys with cell phone cameras there to watch it? Oh, did they have to go out in the ocean to do something and distract you?
Roads? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
And you thought they forgot about us. You know, it's always a distraction. I mean, you know, I don't know what's going to happen. I just know what it is they want to accomplish. You know, it's, expand their intrusiveness, power, authority, you know, over, I don't know, you, me. Give more goodies for them. It's all about more goodies. More goodies. How do they do that? I mean, there's lots of ways, but, you know, here we have, I mean, the point I'm trying to make is that you have such an enormous coverage, even by, you know, the government, we had all these cameras on the Pentagon. Nope, we're not showing you when the plane, you know, hit the Pentagon. All right, so show me. Nope. They released like five frames or something. And nothing that shows the plane was there. And then we had Karen Kwiatkowski, an Air Force colonel that worked, was in the Pentagon when it happened. And she's, you know, a good friend, long story. But bottom line, I'm going, hey, were you there? Yeah. What happened when it hit? Well, we all went out and they gave us stretchers. We're going to go help people. And we go around to the hole and we get there and there's nothing there. No plane wreckage. There's no bodies. There's no plane there. We know. Where'd the engines go? Didn't go through, and it was just a hole. Heck, when it first started, the roof hadn't even caved in. It was just a big 16-foot hole. You know, you hear about that a lot, do you? No. All right. You know, anybody have a cell phone? Got them, you know, do it? But they probably would now. A little bit too much video coverage, just like the Zapruder film for JFK. Dang it, man, if it wasn't for that damn film. Well, you get some film, you know, the planes going to World Trade Center. Dang it, man, if it wasn't for the damn videos. So I'm just going, hell, you have Ahmadinejad with total control on his regime in Iran, at least enough control that they got, you know, armed men in the streets beating back the young protesters. Well, they're getting it all on video, putting it up on their social networking peer-to-peer sites. They even tried to shut off cell phone coverage and the internet and control what can and can't go out. And it just caught them unawares. They didn't know what to do. What does the government learn from this? Man, if you're going to do something, if you're going to be distracting, if you're going to have a big giant woo-hoo, you're going to get the news coverage, you're going to blow something up, you better be able to, you know, either, you know, start earthquakes, make volcanoes, or blow up oil wells, something. yeah, you know, how crazy can I get? You know, the thing is I just, you know, nothing surprises me anymore, can they? Heck, what did we have? I had a woman came in with, it was 1932 May. I remember it was May. It was Popular Science, 1932. They're out in the field. We talked about it on the show. Pulled it up, we posted it. You just put man-made earthquakes in a search on Freedom's Phoenix. Boom, it'll pop up. Popular Science, they're doing it in the 30s. You know, you do it at the right frequency for, you know, a long enough period of time, what happens? You start getting reverberation, resonating just like going ha at a high C on a champagne glass or something. You know, boom, blows up. Memorex commercial. Is it real or Memorex? Well, it doesn't matter. Glass blew up. So I nothing surprises me. So what do you hear me saying on the show? I go, you know, they'll do whatever it takes. Golden Gate Bridge, St. Louis Arch, toast. Too many video cameras. Too much government surveillance. CCTVs, closed circuit televisions. You know, they got enough, you know, whatever they do, I mean, it's going to have to come from what? I don't know, space? I mean, it's got to, you know, something. Or what if we had a couple of Bureau of Land Management guys doing a surprise inspection on the oil rig 2 hours before it exploded? Well, this is, you know that this is going to blow up all over the place. Is it true? I don't know. You know, where did this come from? We got it up, Liberty Cap Press, Bureau of Land Management, yada, yada, yada. Exclusive interview of Zach Zimmerman of Zimmerman Oil reveals little known fact. Bureau of Land Management was doing uncharacteristic surprise inspection the day the oil rig blew up. Well, I got a little bit of audio. Let's play a little bit and see what's up.
Now, you told me something very interesting, which is the main reason why I scheduled this interview. You said that the Bureau of Land Management was doing surprise inspections on the day of this oil rig disaster.
Right. Yeah, I have a friend that I went to college with, actually, and he works for Anadarko. And Anadarko is a minority owner of the big well that has the leak down there in the Gulf.
Okay.
And he wasn't there, but his direct supervisor was there on the platform that morning. And the Bureau of Land Management, which, you know, maybe some people don't you know, really know who that is. It's the Interior Department.
Mm-hmm.
And they control all oil and gas on federal lands, and then they also have jurisdiction over all offshore drilling and production. So they can just show up anytime they want to and do an inspection. But it's extremely rare for them just to show up and do these, you know, surprise inspections. But they were actually there that day. They showed up, I guess, a couple hours before the big explosion.
That's so very interesting. Okay, so there were inspectors on that very rig just a couple hours before it exploded.
Right, yeah, and you know, and there was a number of them. Usually, you know, with the BLM, they don't have that much money to be sending, you know, four or five inspectors to one platform. I mean, there's, you know, thousands of platforms out in the Gulf with not just drilling but actual production platforms, and so it's real rare for more than one of them to show up. And that day, one of them showed up, and, of course, he, you know, showed everybody his ID. But the other guys, nobody ever saw their ID. You know, I'm not trying to start any kind of a big conspiracy or anything like that. I'm just saying, you know, I mean, is it possible? Well, I mean, it's entirely possible that something hinky is going on. I'm not sure. I wasn't there, but I do know they were there.
There's two things that occurred to me. I mean, the biggest, you know, conspiracy, the worst case scenario would be some sort of, you know, intentional sabotage by the government because of some long-term goal having to do with taking over the oil industry or something maybe. But then there's also the possibility that it was, you know, a foreign enemy, some sort of terrorist attack, and because they want to keep it quiet for now.
And the speculation will go and go and go, and it could have been, could have been, could have been, could have been. It could be just all BS, and we don't know. You know, was there? And how did they get there? You know, is it by ship? I haven't watched the whole thing. I mean, it's like 7 minutes. I'll let you guys. It's on Freedom's Phoenix. You go to today's show archive. I have it linked to today, May 5th afternoon show. You just go in there, boom. You know, I got the link in there, and you can go watch it, listen to it. It's a little YouTube. Shows the fire going and them trying to put it out and big explosions and all kinds of made-for-TV goodies. You know, I haven't watched a single second about this incident on television. Not a single second. Because I know whatever they're going to say up there is going to be blah, 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 eye candy, loop reel, blown up, kind of whatever. You don't even know if that's where the freaking rig was. And I think the rig's at the bottom of the ocean anyway. But the, you know, and it's not what they're showing is the fire blew up here. I don't think anything's on fire. They're thinking they're going to have to light the oil and burn it is the best way to, you know, save the beaches or something. But this is enormous. You know, we're hundreds of thousands of gallons a day are just dumping into the ocean. The entire Gulf could be affected. They're talking months before they can cap this, stop it, fix it. Wow. I just got to ask, you know, who does that benefit? I don't know. Now, is it going to, you know, spike oil prices? That's going to be their excuse. Is it going to curtail limits on drilling and competition from the Gulf or somebody else? British Petroleum, well, blow up their own well to kind of start slowing down expansion of drilling in the Gulf so that they could sell their oil that they have monopoly on in the Middle East more, North Sea. You know what? I mean, you don't know. It's just a line on a spreadsheet. It's just somebody sitting there going, if we, and we can, so we do. They make decisions when you're dealing with gazillions of dollars. You know, this guy just pushing a button and kind of, you know, does a little nod and a wink and kind of, you know, pulls on his earlobe and stuff happens. You know, is it really that hard, you know, to make these assumptions? Or is it just something that just needs to be a big distraction? I don't know. But you know what I find interesting? Is that you have so many cameras and so much surveillance by so many people in so many places that all of a sudden you have world news like this out in the middle of the freaking ocean. And still you have a guy that knew somebody that knew somebody that was there that knew that these guys showed up. Oh, yeah, there's always that guy on the flight, remember? You know, I saw. That's not what really happened. Man, they just can't get away with anything. We'll talk about it.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, from Phoenix, Arizona. Hey, from the beautiful studios of Freedoms with an S, freedomsphoenix.com, where you find all kinds of goodies, including amongst all them goodies is interesting stuff. We've been covering the oil spill. How could you not? Because this is going to have an enormous impact on everything. I mean, everything. You know, energy policy. What's Obama going to do about drilling in the Gulf? What are we going to do about environmental protection? We got the congressman on the coast there screaming that the coastal states should be getting some revenue sharing out of the Gulf for just reasons like this, kind of like Alaska does. You know, the people in Alaska, they don't pay income tax. They get a check every year from the government as part of their royalties. You know, it's like United Arab Emirates. You know, that country, you know, a lot of the people that are families, you know, part of the sheikdom that was set up by the British and French and said, you know what, this is your little whatever, sign here, your oil now belongs to us. You know, those guys get a cut. You know, they live well. They have, you know, foreigners come in that do all the domestic work and such like that. You know, it'd be like, I don't know, they have them come from wherever. You know, there's, you know, Filipinos, there's a lot of Arabic countries and poor sheep herding, De La, whatever, here, change my hotel linen. But the people that actually are families that live there, got their papers, please, you know, they get a cut from the government. You know, I think, you know, that you can live relatively well and just sit on your butt in the United Arab Emirates because they get their oil cut. Well, you can imagine if you're living there and it affects your money, you know, you're definitely wanting somebody to, you know, do business for you and do a good job of it. Oh, we need to be raising prices. So I'm nothing surprises me anymore. You know, I mean, we want to cover this. It'll be interesting to see what comes out of it, but I'll guarantee you it'll serve the interest of whatever. You know, is this going to, you know, see, we need a cap and trade. Just for this reason, cap and trade tax, we're going to set some of that tax aside, you know, to make sure this doesn't happen again or clean it up or, you know, whatever. Can you see the manipulation, whether it was intentionally done or not, it's going to be used. We're not going to let what is it Rahm Emanuel said? We're not going to let a good crisis go to waste. Oh, this is a good crisis, as far as they're concerned. So, and I used to live in Florida, and that would really suck to have all the Gulf states having to deal with all this oil. That would blow. So I'm, you know, are we going to find the truth? I mean, do we just ask that single question? You know, is there going to be an investigation of Bureau of Land Management just shows up at the oil rig right before it blows up? Is that something that I think should be reported on? You know, what if it's not true? You know, it won't have any legs. Is it going to be just a conspiracy? It'd be pretty easy to find out, you would think. You ask the guys that were there. Because there was 120-something crew. You know, 100 got away unscathed. There was a dozen guys or so missing. You know, some people were critically burned or injured, at least. I don't know if it was from burns, I would imagine. So this is nothing surprises me anymore. I mean, can you understand why I would take that position? I'm just like, you know, whatever. One other thing in the economy that friends of mine that I respect and very smart made gazillions, literally gazillions of dollars on just knowing the truth about the economy. If you know subprime is going to go, if you know this particular financial stock is lying sacks of snot and they're going to get nailed, if you know, I mean, you make your financial decisions and purchase on the stock market that way. I'm going to short this and long that. Tell you what they keep doing. Every time silver goes down, they buy more. It goes up. It's like almost 19. Then, boom, it's down to 17 whatever now again. You know, based on what? You know, you look at one thing they told me to keep an eye on was Treasury yield 30 years. Now, this is the interest that they're willing to pay on 30 years of holding your money in United States debt. 30 years. You know, what's the likelihood that the United States government is going to pay off their debt on a 30-year note? Now what the benefit is that you can sell your position, your bond. So let's say I buy a $100 bond, okay, a treasury. So I give you $100. Well, what they're offering now is 4.39% interest on it. I mean, it was almost 5 here just yesterday. A few days ago, I said, what are we looking at here? March, April. In April, it peaked up about 4.9, 4.8. So you go, all right, I remember in the early 80s, it was 15%. I mean, it was enormous. It was, oh, my goodness. Here, let's take a look. We can go max on this thing, a little chart. Yep, we're up over 15% in the early 80s. Well, what does that mean? It means that, you know, for people to lend us money, like, heck no. You guys are in hyperinflation. Your manufacturing's going to crap. You got all this Cold War thing going on. You know, the Soviets invading Afghanistan. We're not going to the Moscow Olympics. And, you know, just all kinds of craziness going on. Gas lines and your big giant Das Boot car. You know, so they were going to invest in America. No, heck no. So they had to, well, we'll give you 10%. All right, maybe we'll buy a little bit more. Then we need to sell you more. You need to go more debt. Nope. You know, it got up to 15% return on long-term 30-year bonds, you know, treasuries. Ooh, man. I can make, you know, imagine this. If I had a gazillion dollars and I trust the American government's ability to extract the money from the taxpayer, don't worry about it. We got the slaves under control. You know, then here's a gazillion dollars. Here's $1 trillion. I'll make 15% on that over 30 years. Woo-hoo! You know, so, wow, this is, you know, I can do that. You know, and I think, I don't know, is this annual interest rate? Well, probably. You know, we should ask that. I doubt it's, 4% over 30 years. I'm sure it's an annual rate. So 15% annual rate, man, those bonds are worth some money. Well, it keeps going down. It goes down. It goes down. It goes down. I mean, it was down to as low as, just over 2%, here in just a few years ago. And now it's eking back up. Why? Because people, that U.S. dollar thing, man, I'm not sure how that's going to work out. And I'm not sure they're going to be able to just keep extracting it from the American taxpayer. They had that Loveolution thing going on, man. I don't know. This is kind of like the militia movement in the mid-90s, which a lot of gun control back then. They were doing foreign magazine articles and we were getting interviewed and stuff like that. I was on version of Time Magazine, South Korea, and version of 60 Minutes in Japan, and the German television crews came and spent like 5 days with me. And February, March of 98. And they're going to church with me. They're following me around, want to know, you know, blah, blah, blah. And what I found out, what was really going on, when it was from the South Korean news article that a friend of mine, that one of my employees at the time was from Korea and he could translate it, their whole concern was gun control. The gun control, all the stuff that was going, the craziness in the 90s, was not about, you know, really gun control. I mean, a lot of people just bought more guns. It was convincing investors of other countries and corporations and so on that they could continue to buy United States debt because they were disarming us. They were controlling us. Don't worry. You know, remember Bush goes, read my lips, no new taxes, and then he raised taxes. And then all of a sudden this militia kind of thing started going and all the oppressiveness of the government coming after and blah, 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 blah. Like even Waco, I think that started under, you know, the investigating them going after it. And that was a Bush thing. And then, you know, Clinton kind of inherited it. So I'm going, you know, this is wow. They're all the same. What was the real goal? In these articles, as we were starting to study and you look back in history now, the articles that were being circulated in these other countries, it was to convince them that the government had the American people under control so that you could still invest your money with American debt and that the American taxpayer would eventually be milked enough to pay it back. That's all it was. And I'm like, oh, I get it now. Well, what's happening now? Right now, if you look at, you know, we'll put a 5-day chart on this thing. It in 5 days has plummeted. It went, I don't know what's the percentage here, you know, quite a bit from 4.7 or 4.6 something down to 4.3 something. So, I mean, that's a good chunk. I mean, it's been pretty stable and it's even been going up, but it went down. Why did it go down? The reason it was going down, that they're willing to give less interest on U.S. debt, is because the rest of the world looks worse. The rest of the world looks worse. How's that American economy coming? Green shoots, what? Weeds in the driveway of foreclosed houses? We're able to get more people to put money into our debt here, so that we have to offer less of a return on the rate, and they'll still do it. Why? Because they're looking for safety. They're looking for somewhere to retain the value of their money. They're looking for a safe harbor. They're looking for something. And gold and silver, all of a sudden, it shoots up, and then, boom, it shoots down. There is so much manipulation going on, and we're near the end. Got chickens...